This week, we are joined with Fanfare Label founder, Esther Knight, who has given us such an in-depth episode on the world of sustainability in the fashion industry. Esther studied business studies at Northumbria University, which she calls a calculated decision, as she always knew she wanted to be a fashion buyer, but wanted a broader range of education. After completing her studies, she went on to pursue fashion buying, her last role being a buyer at Vivienne Westwood. In this episode, we spoke about so much, from how working and buying really exposed her to the true cost of fashion, whether socially, ethically, or economically. We touched on the dangers of the chemicals in our clothes and how they affect the people who make our clothing, as well as the huge silent trafficking issue in the fashion industry and how that comes to play. We also spoke about Esther's hardest part of running Fanfare, which is marketing with a very limited to no budget, where she gives tips on what you can do and how sometimes you've just got to do everything until you can afford to hire a team. There's so much to learn and touch on, and if you're planning or have started a fashion brand, it's certainly your responsibility to invest time into learning all you can about sustainability. If you love this podcast, please leave a review on Apple Podcasts and share this with somebody who needs to hear this today. Welcome to the Designer to Designer podcast show. This is a safe space created for aspiring and startup fashion designers entrepreneurs. Through this podcast show, I sit down with some of your favorite independent designers and give you exclusive behind-the-scenes access to their lives and brands. I aim to make sure you get to know the designers for who they are and finally engage with relatable stories. We touch on everything from mindset to finances to their childhoods and their biggest, wildest fashion dreams. This podcast is hosted by yours truly, Rebecca Tembo, founder of a self-titled women's wear label and the Entry platform which produces this show. Now sit tight, enjoy the ride, and get ready to be blown away by today's episode. Welcome to Designer to Designer, Esther. I'm so happy to have you here.
Yeah, I'm so excited to be here. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Do you mind just telling us a little bit about you?
Yeah, of course. So I'm the founder of Fanfare Label. So Fanfare Label is a sustainable women's wear clothing brand. We work with charities that eradicate human trafficking from fashion supply chains, but we also produce ethical collections. So we have a recycled collection that takes clothing and textile waste that would have ended up on landfill, and we repurpose that into new materials. And we also have our new sustainable collection, which works with women empowerment initiatives and various social impact communities, and also uses ethical and environmentally friendly fabrics as well.
Amazing, thank you. So you started working in fast fashion and you saw firsthand the waste and unethical environments that people were forced to work in. So what was your experience like being a buyer?
Yeah, so I've worked for a lot of brands, not all of them fast fashion. So I've worked in industry for over 12 years now. And I did start out in high street fashion. And as a buyer, you're responsible for everything that you see in a store. So we take garments from sketch to store. So anything in between we manage. So if there's an unethical part of the supply chain, or an ethical part of the supply chain, we tend to know about it, and we're speaking to factories all the time, we're selecting factories, we're selecting fabrics, and therefore it's our decisions that are incremental as to whether we are going to produce ethical clothing or whether we're going to go down the other route. So I was just witnessing firsthand and seeing firsthand the issues within the industry, particularly at high street level. It was more from a social side than an environmental side. I was seeing the exploitation firsthand. I was seeing the way that people treat one another in the fashion industry. A lot of people think, oh, the issues are far away, they're in the developing world, the way we produce the garments, but actually they're not at all. They're in the UK, and in a lot of fashion brands, I've seen so many graduates just come out of uni really excited for their career in fashion, and they're just stripped of all self-confidence and self-worth that they have. They're treated appallingly, and I was just fed up of hearing the phrase, that's the nature of fashion, or that's the nature of buying. And I thought, well, what if we made the nature of fashion or buying something positive? What if we made it about empowerment and respect and just all these positive things that we could make it? Fashion is a $50 trillion a year industry, and it is one of the most labour-intensive industries, and it's also one of the biggest contributors for climate change. So that means if things were done right, if things were done responsibly, we could solve the majority of poverty and environmental problems globally. And so this is serious stuff. And I just started to see and witness all of these problems. And rather than leave the industry, I wanted to just bring change to it, bring awareness to the problems, but also offer people an alternative.
Yeah, you actually said in a previous interview that, you know, this whole thing about bringing change where you were. So you didn't just leave your job and say, oh my God, this is horrible. Like, let me actually start with where I work. What were the things that you were doing with where you're working just to try and bring some difference, some change?
Well, I think this it's the way that you carry yourself and the way that you act, and just making sure that under no circumstances do you conform to the culture around you, and just making sure that there's just making sure that I'm empowering my employees and treating them fairly as well, and just being trustworthy and kind and nice, and that just went so much further in the UK. I am in the fashion industry. I get so much more out of my employees when they feel good about themselves, when I value them, when I empower them. Their creativity is so much stronger. So why would I make someone feel horrible about themselves for no reason? But also trying to bring change where I was working, and at every opportunity push ethical fashion, and just say, I actually pitched it to my MD and said, look, the sustainability is going to be the biggest fashion retail movement of the next decade. We need to be getting on this, not just because the industry is going that way, but because it's important. Like, we're at a stage where business as usual is not an option, and we need to bring about change. And so in every place that I've worked, even before setting up my brand, I was the advocate just pushing ethical practices constantly.
The thing I love the most is definitely just what you're saying about what we can just do at work now, because when we do talk about sustainability or ethical practices or like work environments, we don't actually think about our own environments. And you are right in the sense where it's always been a thing of like, well, that's just how fashion is. Fashion is a cutthroat industry. And I do believe that that's fine in the sense where it's hard, because it's good to have a challenge, it's good to work hard, but not to the extent where you're losing your self-confidence for absolutely no reason, because we're now disguising bullying as that's just how it is, you know, or the certain a way that we treat people, we look at people, you know, it puts so much pressure, or maybe you feel like you have to dress up to where you work and then you're now getting in debt or whatever. There's just so many things around it, and it's just a full cycle, and it starts with what we can do, and then we can do so much more like all together. But I do feel like this generation of designers will be the generation to make a huge difference, because the others are kind of set in their ways in the sense where they are now, and it's worked for them. So some might not want to do that change willingly, at least, but hey. Yeah. So coming from a business background, you study business studies at Northumbria University, and I'm wondering whether fashion was something you've just always been interested in.
Yeah, it was definitely. I knew I wanted to be a fashion buyer, but I actually didn't want to do a buying degree because I didn't want to pigeonhole myself for just that career. So I thought if I do business studies and get work experience within the fashion sector, then I can still go into fashion, but I've got a business degree as well. And it kind of set me apart a bit, because being a buyer, you're responsible for the clothes and the money at the end of the day. Like, you're the one that's driving the cash for that business. If you put something in store that's not going to work, or if you develop a product that's not going to work, it's on your head, that business success. So buyers need to know, have like a holistic view of what happens within a business, because they're responsible for the profitability of that business. So actually that did set me apart a little bit, knowing studying a business degree and getting that full rounded picture of how a business operates.
Let's quickly just touch into that. So what do you think you have really learned from studying business and being a buyer that's really helped you or given you that advantage with Fanfare? Because a lot of people come from absolutely no experience whatsoever. So you do kind of have a head start in the sense where you had some experience in education.
Yeah. But calculated as well. It was, I thought about it a lot, about what I should study and things like that. So it wasn't, I just did it and it worked out. It was very, very well thought through. And from a business side, I was just really interested in how entrepreneurship works and how you develop a business. I was really interested in the marketing side as well. And particularly on the finance side, the boring side that people never want to study, that's where I actually found the most help, because the risk analysis side of weighing up financially the risks of working, going for a project versus another, this can relate to influencer marketing, just calculating the amount coming back to you versus your investment and return on investment, and so all these little things that you think you don't really need at the time, but actually that translates to my career in fashion, but also what I do as a business owner as well, and so all of the little things that you think are never going to help or always end up doing so. And critical path analysis, I never thought I'd hear that word ever again after my degree, and then that's all people talk about in industry, and so it's all these little metrics that you think are absolutely useless when you're studying, and they are generally used in industry. So your pastel analysis, your SWOT analysis, and all those business terms that I know that you study in fashion buying as well. I wanted to give myself more of a general option for if I didn't go down the fashion route, I also had other options.
Yeah, no, that is very, very smart. And I think if anyone's listened to this podcast, then I definitely recommend if you're going to go and study, to think a bit more broader in the subject. Even if you want to do fashion marketing, study marketing instead, because there's going to be a lot more things that you're going to cover within that than just a specific industry. And I feel like you just get so much more ideas when you're surrounded by something which is a bit outside of your industry. If you're just mm-hmm. focused on fashion, you wouldn't know what other people are doing, and then you could actually implement that into your brand or whatever you choose to do. So you identified a problem in the industry and decided to make a difference. What were the first initial steps to creating a fanfare? And I'd like that to be more thing of especially creating a sustainable brand, because it's a bit different in the way you probably started.
Yeah, well, it all started with my values and what I wanted to bring. I didn't necessarily want to start up my own company, but there wasn't really anywhere at the time that I felt comfortable working that was sustainable or had responsible supply chains. So it was a case of doing a lot of research, a lot of networking, really calculating, is this the right step for me? Is this the right step for the industry? I need to be completely sure, because it will starting a business takes over your whole entire life. And so you need to do your research. So it started off with research and networking for a good couple of years, because I wanted to be certain that this is the way the market was heading. We're talking way before anyone even mentioned the word sustainable, apart from Vivienne Westwood, of course, and Stella McCartney. We're talking way before that anything really was happening. So I wanted to make sure that I was sure. So it started off with research, and then it's about setting up a company based on the values and the morals that I wanted, and making sure that every decision was reflective of those initial values and morals.
I love that. And then what would be the next step? So you've got your morals, you've got your values, you know what you're trying to create, you've done your research, and then what would you do after that?
Well, then it's about designing the collection then and making it relevant, and seeing whether you can source sustainable factories and fabrics, and starting the design process, which you would normally do in high street anyway. It works a little bit different with sustainable fashion, because whereas in industry you design sketches and then you find fabric according to those sketches and you develop a range, whereas when you're working sustainably, there's not as much infrastructure in place, so you're very don't have as much choice in terms of fabrics and things. So you're kind of doing it the opposite way. So you have to find your fabrics and then sketch around those. So we start the design process, but it's a long process. It took years of research.
So I'd love to touch on the fabrics you use, which are all sustainable, plastic-free, and accredited by reputable organizations such as Ecotex and GOTS. So how did you go about finding the right fabric suppliers? Because I think that's a huge thing that people don't really know where to start when it comes to finding sustainable fabric.
Yeah. All of our fabrics are completely different. So they're not all certified by those two bodies. Those are two elements of the collection. So GOTS certified organic cotton means that the supply chain has been investigated. There's no, it's organic cotton and there's no chemicals within that. And then the EOTEX cotton again means the supply chain has been investigated and there's no chemicals within that, and it's eco-dyed and chemical free. So each sustainable fabric has different qualities. So our sustainable linen is made by an ethical supplier in Belgium, where there's no waste within linen, because the actual plant is one of the most sustainable plants that there is. It takes less water and there's no wastage at the end of it. So every single fabric has different qualities to be sustainable, and they're not all necessarily blanketed under different certifications, but it is really important to look out for those certifications as well. And I suppose it just starts with research and it starts with networking, and that goes back to when I first started the business. I can't just start a business with no product, and that's really where the research comes in. It takes years to find suppliers, it takes years to find these fabrics, and once you're in that network, things get easier along the way. But there's a lot of infrastructure that needs to happen within that space, and we're still at early stages of the sustainability curve, so there's still lots to be done in the area, and there's still really high minimums. So for a small brand to reach those quantities, it is really hard. So it does take a lot of research to find suppliers and fabrics and a lot of different resources as well.
Do you mind just telling us a bit about the chemicals in fabric? Because we don't really think about what we're wearing and how it can harm us, and also the people that are actually making the clothes, especially in developing countries.
Yeah, it's a real issue. And it's actually one of the reasons I started up my business, because it's serious. Like, people are not being provided with basic health and safety to protect them from the chemicals that are going into clothing. And what I would recommend for anyone who wants to learn more about this is actually watch the True Cost documentary. I think it's on Amazon Prime or Netflix, because this goes into detail about the chemical side, and I won't give it justice because I don't know as much, and they researched it. But a huge amount of life-threatening chemicals actually go into making our garments. Jeans are actually one of the worst. The chemicals that are used for distressing jeans are really serious. And when people aren't provided masks to protect themselves, this is where we get fashion actually killing people, because it goes into their systems, and then that's the breadwinner of that family that has unfortunately died because of the fashion production. And this is for T-shirts and jeans, it doesn't matter. These are people's lives at risk. And that's why it's so important to get these certified fabrics. We've got also that like the chemicals within the dyes, and we've got really horrible cases of villages within India where the dyes are going into the water streams and the villages are drinking from those waters, and then you're getting children being born with disabilities as a result, and you're getting people getting cancer really, really young. And so these dyes are literally seriously affecting people in different countries that are producing our garments. But as well, it also has an impact on the end wearer. We have got hazardous chemicals. We, like with anything synthetic or man-made, there is things in our clothes that we don't know about. There's constant product recalls for dangerous things within products that they're having to recall because it is causing cancer or it's causing skin problems, or it's like anything. It's like when you the food that we eat, it's just being really considerate about what we're putting on and in our bodies, because unfortunately we can't really trust what's being offered at the moment, and so the chemical side is a problem, and the processing behind that. I don't have exact facts, but if you want to learn more about that, definitely watch the True Cost documentary.
What would you say to those that they want to start a fashion brand, and they, I guess their argument would be it costs too much to create a sustainable brand because fabric, it's probably a bit more expensive. and maybe using a more ethical manufacturer, especially if they're going to do it in the UK. And that's not to say the UK is perfect, but you know what I mean. Yeah, what would you say to them? Because they're thinking, well, I just really need to start and I don't have the money to be as sustainable as I'd like to be.
It's a tricky one. To create any product business aside from a sustainable product business is expensive. That is the reality of it. It's really hard and it takes a massive sacrifice. It really does. And any business owner would say that you need a bit of money to be able to do that, because for example, our business, all of our money and all of our revenue goes straight back into the product, because it costs so much to develop a product-based business. And so that leaves nothing for marketing. It leaves nothing for publicizing or brand awareness or PR or anything. And that's the nature of, unfortunately, being a small brand. Like, that's the reality of it. It takes a while to get going because people need to find you organically, because it is so expensive and it is really, really hard. There's various grants and various business support out there, which I would say definitely explore. But from my perspective, I can never say, oh, that's okay if you don't have money. It justifies for not sustainable practices, because in my opinion, anyone starting a business has to be responsible for the people making their clothes and also the environment. And that's an absolute must, and that will never change, because it's serious. It's people's lives at risk. We're in a climate emergency and we have to take responsibility. That being said, it's impossible to have a brand that is 100% sustainable as well, but it's just about doing the very best you can with the resources that you've got. And starting a business is really, really hard. And that's why I took so much time researching, because it's serious. We really need to look into it beforehand.
No, definitely. And that's true. There is really no excuse now. And I think maybe it's people realizing that you don't have to get everything perfect straight away, but it's doing something. So maybe it's okay, you can't get the sustainable fabric that you want because you want to be at a certain price point, but then your business model could be different to reduce waste, because then you could go through a process of like pre-order or made to order or something like that. But even if it is a thing about, you know, the cost of the product due to fabric or whatever it is, then it's really looking at where you place your brand and changing that customer to be able to, well, someone that would be able to afford your brand and stuff like that. So just starting somewhere, looking at your packaging as well. Packaging is probably the easiest place when it comes to that, because you can get recycled boxes or, you know, whatever, biodegradable bags and everything. So there's things that people could do. But yeah, so one of the things that you've spoken about whilst working in fast fashion was the poor working environments of those further down the supply chain. And your clothing is produced in the UK. So I'm wondering what you did to ensure the conditions of the people making your clothes.
Mm-hmm. Well, everything's local, so we can keep an eye on it. And I think that's the main thing, is that when things are produced really far away, it's really hard to monitor, and many brands might not know what's happening in their supply chain. When you localize the supply chain, it means that you can have more transparency and you build a relationship with your suppliers. I've got great relationships with my suppliers. I'm going there today, and I'm there at least once a week. And so you build a relationship, you get to know the workers, and you get to have a longer term relationship with that as well. There's also things as being that can be certified. So if I'm getting something made abroad, there is certification. So like there is the Fair Wear Foundation, which means that factories are investigated and things like that as well. So there is, I'm not saying that if you don't get things made in the UK, it's unethical, because that's not at all the case. There's many factories that are ethical and that are covered by the Fair Wear Foundation. So I would say that like if we ever decide not to get things produced in the UK, we're getting these ethical bodies to approve them as well. But the great thing about getting everything made locally is that we can do small production runs. We're not producing huge volumes, so we can buy back into things, and customers get a more personalised, made-to-order approach. It also means we can get involved in social community initiatives as well, and we've recently got a supplier on board excuse me, which is an NGO that works with women who are in prison to get them a qualification within either sewing or pattern cutting or something along those lines, so that when they are released, they're qualified and they can get a job within the fashion industry of some form. So there's various, what's great about making local is that you can get really involved in your local community and make a difference.
That is amazing. Please send me the details for that scheme with the woman in prison, because wow, I've never actually heard about that before. Really cool. Amazing. So something people don't really know a lot about is the human trafficking in the fashion industry. So do you mind educating us a little on what happens behind the scenes that we are completely blind to?
Yeah. So human trafficking, again, is just something absolutely horrific that is a huge problem in this day and age. So it's actually estimated that 40 million people globally are in slavery conditions, and that's across multiple industries and obviously not just fashion. So that's across agriculture. It includes sex trafficking, and it also includes fashion as well as other industries. There's a lot in food as well. And we work with International Justice Mission, who their main aim is to eradicate slavery within our lifetime. And so they operate across multiple different industries, but they do focus on fashion as well. And so that's why we work with them, really. We raise awareness for them. We do events for them. We get proceeds. We raise proceeds for them. And we also support them in their giving months. And that is really something that's really close to my heart, to just eradicate slavery, and not just in fashion, because I used to volunteer at a human trafficking charity whilst I worked in fashion. And then I realised that there was human trafficking within the fashion industry. And I thought, well, I'm volunteering to stop it, but I'm also working in an industry that promotes it. Well, not promotes it, it doesn't promote it, but has it within. And so there were two just really contradictory things. And so it didn't make sense for me to start a business to then not support the work of a charity to try and eradicate that slavery. So it's happened where supply chains are far away because you can't track them. And a lot of situations are with particularly big brands is that they have a factory, they buy from a factory, and then that factory outsources it to another factory. And so that brand thinks that they're just dealing with factory number one, but actually they're dealing with factory number two, three, and four. And factory two, three, and four are the ones where a bit of dodgy things are happening. And that's where you can get child labor, and that's where you can get slavery. And that is why it's really hard for people to manage the traceability of the supply chain, because it's the factory number one that is outsourcing it. It's not necessarily the brand. But again, it's the brand's responsibility to fully investigate their full supply chain. So it's where the clothing is passed down the line to various factories.
Yeah, a lot of people actually don't know that the factory that they are communicating with actually work with factories underneath them to produce things. Mm-hmm. Yeah, a lot of people have no idea. So that's actually a very, very good point. And in terms of these people that would be trafficked, what are they doing? So would they be making the clothes, like the sewing or like patterns?
Again, if anyone wants to find out more about this, go onto the International Justice Mission website, and they have stories of people being rescued within slavery, and so it tells their story. So every single story is completely different. So there's stories of underground factories where people are making your clothes and they're slaves. With International Justice Mission they've rescued a bunch of women recently who were making silk. They were producing silk, and they rescued them, and their fingers were all damaged from just constantly working the silk, and they were not being paid, and in these underground factories, and it's overworking, and it's not paying, and it's working in an environment where they're just in a room and they have access to one toilet in the corner, and they're not allowed out that room, and they're producing that clothes. It's just not acceptable. But there's so many different horror stories, and I don't want to depress everybody today but if you want to hear more about it, definitely check out International Justice Mission.
Yeah, and you know, I feel like it doesn't take a lot for you to realize that this has to be happening. Like, if you can go onto Pretty Little Thing or Boohoo and buy something for like £10 or even £30, you know, like what do you think the worker got paid, the person making it? What do you actually think they got paid? And when they do their discounts and it's like £5, all of these things, like they didn't get anything. Because I can sew, I can make stuff, so I can't even make something for £5. So how can they make something for £5, you know? And that's not to even say that that's it, because there is shipping, tax, all of these costs that come within fashion to create that final price, yet alone your profit margin. So I think it was in that True Cost of Fashion documentary where they said something, I think it was that documentary, if not somewhere else, that these big brands, such, let's just say H&M, for example, can go to the factory and say, we're going to pay you like, you know, £3 a top or something. And obviously the factory need more than that. But because they're such a huge brand and they're doing like a huge order, they're just going to kind of like take it because they need the money, you know? And then they can come and say, well, actually another factory said to us £2.50. So, you know, you need to do it for £2.50. And it just keeps going like lower and lower and lower because they're trying to increase their profits. And then these factories need the work and then they're overworked because they're having to do even more work to try and make up for the money that they're missing out on. There's even, I can't remember, I think it was one of these fast fashion brands, maybe in the Style or something like that. I can't remember, but there was a documentary on like Channel 4 maybe, and it was just showing like the workplace, like just their offices in the UK and everything, and they were bargaining on like a dress or something with a manufacturer, like they're trying to get it like super super cheap. And it was, I think people probably looked at that and thought, oh, like, is this actually how it is? Like, they literally paid like £2 or something for it. But I'm gonna find it and put this in the description because it's so important that people watch this and really understand it, because we're obviously talking, but when you really go and see it, then you know, you'll know for sure. But yeah, it's,
and then just to add to that, that's why corners are cut. So you've got a factory has been beaten down on their price so much so that they can't afford to pay their workers properly, they can't afford to provide health and safety, so then they outsource to this dodgy factory that has these things so that they can afford it, and then there's the vicious cycle that you've got. And it starts with the brand. And that's what buyers do. Buyers are there to negotiate products, and it's their job to hit margin targets. And if you've got a margin target, a lot of the industry will hit that no matter what the impact is on people or the environment, because the pressure is just going down. And then that buyer will put pressure on the supplier. And what they will do is like, right, well, unless you give me this price, I'm going to take all of my business and move it somewhere else to leave you with nothing, leaving that supplier in a completely stuck position and with no choice other than to accept that order. And that's where Rana Plaza disaster happened, where the whole factory collapsed, killing over 1,000 people. And that's because there was severe issues within the building structure, but they were under so much time pressure to fulfill orders for brands, because they would be penalized even more if that order is late. I've heard about instances in Bangladesh where the building catches fire and people are made to carry on working because they're late for an order, and they will get penalised. And this is for a company that turns over $32 million a year. And these people are working in a burning building because they don't want to get, because if they're late, they will then get the very little money that they're earning off that, they will get penalised 10%, or you're late, 10% discount off that order. And that could be that they've just done that for no reason. And then with the pandemic, we've seen people just cancelling their orders, even though everything is made, and then that the factory suffer that cost. And it's all these malicious little practices that you think, oh, I'm only negotiating the cost, but actually the detrimental process of that is just so catastrophic that it does start here. It starts with our companies just paying fair wages, because it's, as you said, it's impossible. We've lost the value of clothing. We don't know how much. If I sat anybody down to make a shirt, take you about a week, if not longer, and we're paying £30 for that. And it's just, and this is, it has to be cut and sewn. The yarn has to be made. It has to be drawn into a fibre. It has to be then made into a yarn. It has to be cut and sewn. It has to be dyed. It has to be have VAT on it. Then the product margin. It's impossible. And we've lost the value of clothing. And a lot of people don't realise that this is why fast fashion brands can't necessarily, they can't be sustainable, because they're built on a business model of selling cheap clothing fast. And how, when clothing is cheap, how can people have been paid fairly, or how can the environment not be impacted, and how are corners not cut? Because it's not possible. And that's the biggest thing, really.
Yeah, and we've just been trained to think that what we do pay is the norm. Like, yeah, this is just how it is. You know, you should get jeans for £25. Like, that is very normal. But when you actually know the behind the scenes of everything that happens and all the costs included, it would raise red flags and you'll be like, wait, something isn't adding up, because there's no way that I would sit down and make something for £1 or even less, you know, for a day of work. You know, that's some of them don't even make that a week, you know. So
and we also think that this is, oh, it's far away, it's not a problem that's far away. But actually this happens in Leicester. Like, we've had a recent scandal where factories were raided in Leicester and they found people being paid less than £3.50 an hour, and they were over the age of 25. And so this is everywhere. It's not just, it's not my problem, because it's every individual to investigate what is actually happening and just start asking some questions.
Yeah, 100%. So we've spoken a lot about starting your brand and making it sustainable as it can be. Your first collection had great success, including features in Drapers and the Sunday Times. But one would be naive to think it's been a walk in the park. So what has been the most challenging situation to date so far?
Well, I would say, like, running your own business is just so challenging. You have really high highs and really low lows, and it's just managing that constant process. And I've gone from a industry where it's like high pressure, loads of people, just constantly on the go, to working on my own, and that has been a big adaptation, because I hate being on my own. I'm a massive extrovert. I want to be around people, and going to that solo cell, running your own business, has been really hard, and not having loads of people to talk over things with and that. So that would be a massive problem. And also what I mentioned before, the managing the cost side. As a business, we're completely self-funded. We haven't had cash injections to spend on marketing. And so being able to build the brand and build awareness with no budget for that, and competing with the people with huge budgets, has been really difficult.
So what have you been doing? This is actually such a good question, because I guess this is also something that would make people think, oh, you know what, like, let me not even bother, because all I can do is the product side. Like, I can get the stuff made, but I can't actually now pay to market my brand. So what have you been doing to grow organically?
Yeah, it is a case of organic growth, and it means that as a founder, I'm responsible for everything until I can afford to bring someone on to help with marketing. So it means that you're doing everything. It means that you're contacting PR. It means that you're doing every single social post. It means that you're doing every single marketing post. And I do a lot of talks and events and lectures and things like that, which obviously is really good for generating brand awareness, but it's a slow process. It doesn't happen overnight when you're managing everything yourself.
And you do this full-time, right, running your brand?
Yeah.
So how much work does that take? Like, give someone like a realistic overview of, you know, because I think there's this misconception of fashion is, I think people are starting to understand it's a hard industry, especially if you're creating a business, but they don't realize how hard it is, like, actually owning a brand and doing everything.
Yeah. Well, obviously everything, every week is completely different, but I've had to just set work-life balances, otherwise it would just take over. But you never get everything done at all. You've always got things going on, but it's any business owner in any industry will just tell you that they just work around the clock constantly. It's not just fashion. It's just if you run your own business, it's really, really really intense, but it's also good. We're growing now, we're getting a lot more support. We've actually hired someone in marketing, so yeah, we're at the other end of it now.
Oh, amazing. Would you say that should be your first hire, someone in marketing? So I've actually heard that before.
Yeah, definitely, especially because I'm from a design background and I did a business degree, but I would say that definitely marketing is the key.
Okay, perfect. So to you, what's the most rewarding thing about being a fashion designer and a businesswoman?
Probably just being able to get involved in the initiatives that I want to get it involved in, and just feeling that I'm making a positive difference, and especially when we find it like a new charity or a new social community to help, it's really rewarding. It makes you feel like you're, everything you do is with purpose, and it's great.
Amazing. So what's in the plans for Fanfare? What are you cooking up?
So we are designing our autumn winter collection at the moment, which is really exciting. And we don't know whether we'll be involved in the London Fashion Week over the summer. We'll have to see. It's really busy for us at the moment. We're just working on our partnerships, we're working on our new collection, and just really expanding the circularity side of the business, which is really exciting.
Perfect. I'm excited to see what you do. Do you have any fashion business or self-development content books or podcasts that you would recommend for our audience?
Yeah, I've recommended a couple already, but I would say the best resources for sustainable fashion are Eco Age and Fashion Revolution. Definitely check those out. And Fashion Roundtable as well, if you work in the industry. That's really helpful. But watch the True Cost documentary. It's a great place to start.
Definitely. I think it's on Netflix, so people should be able to find it. Yeah, that's why I watched it. But perfect. So where can our audience find you?
Yeah, so make sure that you follow us at Fanfare Label, and our website is fanfarelabel.com. And it's just great. So it's brilliant to see support and things. So please just share our posts or let anyone know about us that are interested in sustainable fashion.
And I just want to add that Fanfare, on their website, you guys have a lot of information about sustainability as well. So if you do want to learn more, you can definitely go to the Fanfare website and actually learn some stuff there too. So thank you so much, Esther, for being on the podcast. Absolutely enjoyed it, and I learned so much from you.
Yeah, no, it's been great. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you so much for tuning into today's episode. I hope you're inspired to take action on your dreams right away. If you enjoyed it, please leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. This really helps us expand our show and reach more people just like you. Until next time, keep striving and thriving.